accession number 18470, reel 3.
Mr. Sell, reel 3.
We had the shell firing behind us, and we were told to expend ammunition at a rapid rate, which we knew didn't sound too healthy. We did this, the other section had gone off. We turned our mortars round. We hadn't expended all the ammunition. We turned the mortars round and we were firing back the way we had to go. And we used up the ammunition, loaded up. I think we was in jeeps then, because I think the carriers were all clapped out by then. And we was off again along this dirt road. And about 300-400 yards along this road, one side of the road was a slope from a hill. The other side was a flat bit of country. And along this hillside, there was 3-4 deep Chinese, long for about 400 yards, I suppose. Apparently what had happened, we learned later, that the Chinese had got behind us. They'd come down from this hill. Unfortunately for them, in this flat bit of ground, there was American howitzers turned round on the hill and were firing over open sights at this hill as they came down. And of course, as they came down, they was rolling down the steep, and they was piled up right alongside it. It was, well, by now we'd really got used to bodies, but it was quiet. And then we stopped towards the end of where all these bodies were. And I think, I can't remember why we stopped, but I remember Captain Ferry picking up this dead Chinese by his belt, and as he lifted him up, it's just rice spilled from his stomach. Anyway, we got out of there. I can't remember how we got out there, but we got out there.
This was winter time, was it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We got out of there, and we'd heard that the section had gone back. The mortar platoon had come under fire. The platoon, the section sergeant, had been shot and killed. My two friends I told you about earlier, Charlie Gordon, David Livingston, they were both killed. Yes. They were two really great lads.
They were killed in action, were they?
I was killed by Mortimer. I think if I hadn't been put on the mortar course, I'd have been in the same section. The section was wiped out. They were National Servicemen, same as myself. I find there's big blanks in what I can remember. Not being able to talk about it for so many years. And there's other bits that I can remember as if it was yesterday. I I remember being in a slit trench. It was only about 6 foot long. Just enough, just wide enough to get into. One end was covered. I was sitting up the covered end. The lad that was with me was at the other end. We were cleaning grenades. Take the base plug out. Pull out the detonator, clean it, put it back together. All of a sudden this boy at the other end gave a shout. Dropped the grenade. Jumped out the trench. What he'd done, he'd taken the base plug out. Hadn't taken the detonator out. Took the pin out. So the firing pin detonates the detonator, which explodes the grenade. I couldn't get out of the grenade. I thought, if I try and get over the grenade, I'll cop it. So I just put my head in the corner and screwed myself up as small as I could. There was an explosion. I couldn't believe I was still there. What had happened? The pin had come down, hit the detonator. The detonator exploded, but because the base plug wasn't on, it blew the detonator out, the grenade didn't go off. So it's not always the enemy that are the problem. I found I could cope with the cold. And I always felt that being an Englishman among the Scots there, I had to sort of, I don't know, I had to more or less set an example of some sort. I say it sounds a bit boastful, but that's how I felt. I felt I had to stick up for the English in the regiment, you know, because many of the officers were English. In fact, most of the battalion were regular soldiers who had been in the Second World War. There was very few National Service, when I think there was only four of us in the Malta platoon that were National Servicemen, the rest were all regulars. In fact, when we was told we was going to Korea, that we were put into rifle companies because they said they wanted regular soldiers in the Malta platoon. But when we got there, they didn't have enough, so we were put back in the Malta platoon. But Malta platoon is not very popular with the riflemen, because we're usually just behind them, firing over them. And the Malta platoon, Malta's usually become the target for the enemy, for obvious, especially in Korea where it's all hills, where artillery bases weren't always able to do the job. And so the mortars were used considerably by both sides. The mortars that the Koreans used tended to be heavier than ours. And burp guns, I mean, we called them burp guns. They used to go brrr, brrr, tremendous amount of fire. In fact, remember me telling you about the platoon I was in at Fort George? There was a boy named Hunter. He was a university student. He got his commission and he joined us on just before we went to Korea. First night in the line, he was shot in the chest. So he spent one night there. He wasn't killed. I don't know what, I've not heard anything about him since. to think of. I mean, when you've gone, I should remember things that I should have told you. I can remember towards the end of our time there, we'd been pulled back out the line, and I was on this hill, and Captain Ferry's batman, he wasn't a very nice character, perhaps I should say that, but he wasn't, and he didn't like the Englishman, and somehow he picked an argument on the side of this hill with me, and he come running at me. Now, I'm not a violent person, and he come running at me, his fist flailing. I just stuck out a fist and caught him right, and I, as you see, I got big knuckles. And it split his jaw. And he come running at me, and all I was doing was sticking my fist out more or less to protect myself, and he was running onto it. And a few days later, Captain Ferry came to me and says, "What have you been doing to my batman?" I said he'd done it himself. He kept running onto my fist, and he just grinned. He was a good man, Captain Ferry. Actually, he went into South Africa as a look after the wild animals, you know that.
Game warden,
that's it. And his jeep overturned out in South Africa, and he was killed. This was near the end of our time, and then we were told that the Chinese had broken through. We were to go back up in the line again. Weren't very pleased, thought we'd got away with it. But for some reason, only the Middlesex were sent back up the line, and we stayed where we were. And I remember now, I can just remember it. We'd been pulled out and told we were going back to Hong Kong. And I remember waking up in the morning, and we were sleeping under tents. And I could hear the pipes and drums playing. And I thought, thank Christ, that's over. And we had a parade in the afternoon. And we had a regimental sergeant major who joined us just to go to Korea. Perhaps I shouldn't be saying this, but his name was Boyd, OSM Boyd. No one liked him, never saw him at the front, not like Nelson, who was our CO, and Muir before he was killed. So I tell him Muir got the VC, Victoria. And most of the officers and NCOs, they were great, great men. I think without them, there would have been far more casualties than there were. But this Boyd, we was lined up there, this Sergeant Major Boyd, called out, "That man there, stop talking." And he pointed at me, I'd spoke to anyone. "Take this main sergeant," this sergeant standing in front of us. And he walked up to me. He said, "Take no bleeding notice, laddie." And that was it. This, perhaps I shouldn't say this, the RSM was posted once we got back to Hong Kong. We called him Banzai Boyd, because when the Chinese and the Koreans charged, they used to blow bugles and shout Banzai, Banzai, so he got nicknamed Banzai Boyd. Got back to Hong Kong. When we got on the ship, it was an American ship taking us back to Hong Kong. there was a notice on their notice board saying this is a Highland battalion from the Highlands of Scotland. Bit of a wild bunch. I mean, wasn't a wild bunch really. Got back to Hong Kong, back to the New Territories again. Big parade. Kilts and all that. Notice went up on the notice board. Volunteers to go back to Korea. One of the lads I'd powered up with, Albert Tredit, come from the Golden Highlanders, sleeping in the bed next to me. He went and put his name up to go back to Korea. Middle of the night, I heard him get up. I said, "Where are you going?" So I'm going to cross my name off. No one went back. I joined the Argyles with the intentions, if I liked the army life, I would sign on as a regular. I think that's how I got in there, actually. But I thought I wasn't going to push my luck any further. And we got the boat home. I think it was July, we got the boat home. Same draft that I went out there with. Pulled into Singapore. One of the lads that was in that officer's platoon was there. Can't remember his name. Nice lad though. He'd got a commission in the Seaforth Islanders, who were in Malaya at the time. He'd made a point of coming to the boat to see me, which was nice. Got the boat home. Uneventful journey home, really. Saw the White Cliffs of Dover. Highly delighted. Pulled into Southampton. My brother and my fiance, she was then, because I was engaged at 18, were at Southampton. And to meet me. But of course I couldn't go home, I had to go back to Stirling Castle. But quite a joyful occasion, I suppose. Went back to Stirling Castle. Was there for a while. And trying to encourage us to sign on. But I don't think anyone did. Got our leave to come home, to come out the army. Same draft that I'd done training with. Come to the railway station to see me off. They all stood there thinking, "Will you never come back again?" That's the last I saw them for 40 years. One day I met, I was in the British Legion at Sandhurst, a parade there, and I met an Argyle. Had the lot on the kilt, Glengarry, Sporran, the lot. Three Rhodes of medals, been in the Second World War. And as you always do when you met an Argyle, you want another chat. He said, "Why don't you join the Argyle Association?" I said, "Never heard of it." He said, "There's a branch in London." He gave me the address. And I phoned them up. And they said, "Yes, come along, join." I said, "Are you in touch with anyone that was in Korea?" They said, "Yeah, quite a few." I said, "Do you know Roy Vincent? He's a corporal in our section." And I said, yeah. He said, I was talking to him only 2 days ago. So I got in touch with Roy Vincent. And then there was the 40th anniversary of Korean War. There was a reunion at Stirling Castle. Well, I put my name down. And a lad, David Muir, was a good mate of mine in the army, right through training and that. He went to Stirling Castle, saw the list up there, and he said, he told me later, he said, there, right at the top was your name. So I got your phone number. And the phone rang here one day. And I said, Scott accent. Guess who this is? I said, no, I don't know. He said, it's Davy. I said, not Big Davy. He said, yeah, Davy Muir. He said, where the bloody hell have you been? He said, I've been looking for you for 40 years. And he said, you're kind of coming up to the reunion? I said, yeah. So in fact, I'm coming up here for a couple of weeks' holiday, a place called Loch Oran. He said, I'll meet you up there. And we went up to Loch Oran. And I phoned him up and said where I was. And he said, I'm coming up to see you. I can't wait till next week. He came up to Loch Oran. And he said, come back and stay with us. We went and stayed with him. And we didn't stop talking.
Going back to Korea, you haven't said anything about any contact you had with Korean civilians.
Korean civilians. We had one or two young lads at the Nakton who brought water to us, rations to us, and what they called A-frames. And almost everyone was called a Kim. Kim, this, Kim. That really was the only connection we had with civilians. We could see them all dressed in white, some of these black pointed hat things. Refugees coming along the road, and sometimes we saw American MPs going amongst them trying to sort out infiltrators. And quite often you'd see an MP clout someone with a baton or something. They'd probably found what they thought was an infiltrator. But villages we went in, they were deserted, most of them. When we went through, I went through Seoul 4 times. And each time I went through, it was on fire. It was just burning. So we never really had any contact with. In fact, there was, sometimes there was leave. Well, if your name came out the hat, you got 2 weeks leave in Japan. Unfortunately, mine didn't come out of the hat, so I didn't get 2 weeks. I can't remember sleeping other than on the ground or in a foxhole for almost 9 months. I can remember Thanksgiving Day. Again, it's nothing to do with. There's a lot of the action that's, I can't remember. But other instances, like Thanksgiving Day was a big day for the Americans. And we'd swap some rations, army rations, for the back end of a pig from this farmer. And we'd cook this pig, and we'd gorge us, because we didn't get fresh meat at all, it was all timber, but we'd gorged ourselves on this pig. And we came across this American army detachment, and they was having a turkey Thanksgiving. They invited us to join the we'd go to herself on this pig. Another incident I can remember, Christmas Day. We'd dug into the side of this hill and we'd put a cover over it. And we'd carved like a fireplace in the side of the hill and made a little fire there. And we'd covered the top of it with straw. There was four of us sleeping in it. We woke up in the night and we'd stacked all our grenades and ammunition up against the underside of the hill, like under the cover. And the straw, we'd left the fire alight, and the straw had caught fire and it was burning with all this ammunition. And we managed to take the ammunition out and get out. Funniest sort of incidents stick in your mind like that.
You mentioned the dysentery, but were there any other diseases that soldiers got in Korea?
Well, there was it was the cold, really. People were frozen to death. I don't know why the cold didn't bother me that much. I just can't understand it. I mean, I hear other people talk about people being frozen to death, frostbite. I didn't know anyone that had frostbite. I didn't know anyone that, although it was really cold, I mean, you'd wake up sometimes and you'd sleep with a cap covered on, the top of it would be frozen, you know, and your blankets were covered with frost and snow. The Americans supplied us with, well into the winter, they supplied us with decent clothing, really, and sleeping bags, which was a big asset. I mean, before that, we just had blankets. Dysentery, well, I was really bad for 2 or 3 days. I was so weak. It was just running from me, you know. But other than that, I kept quite healthy. I've got a picture up there upstairs of was taken when we got back to Hong Kong. We're standing on the borders by China, and it's China behind us. It was just before we went on the parade, and I look as fit as a fiddle, quite honestly.
What were relations like between the different Commonwealth battalions in Korea?
We never met another battalion. We passed 29 Brigade was supposed to relieve us. 29 Brigade landed sometime after us. They had Centurion tanks. The Centurion tanks were too wide for the roads, especially the roads on the hills. So that delayed 29 Brigade even longer. And we kept getting our 29 Brigade's going to relieve you, but they were a long while coming, and it wasn't till almost our time there was up